This week's parasha is Parashas Mishpatim. And when we get to Parashas Mishpatim, I think many of us have the feeling that the fun and games, so to speak, are over. The Avos, Maase Bereishis, Yosef, Yetzias Mitzrayim, all of these great events, all of these fascinating personalities are now at least temporarily halted, and now we have to roll up our sleeves and get involved in the nitty-gritty of halacha, in the dinam of mazik, and the dinam of genevas, and the dinam of dalet shaimrim, dinam of eved ivri, and that could somehow sometimes be a little daunting and maybe disappointing for some. But truth be told, there is a silver lining even in the Mishpatim of the Torah, and that's what we're going to talk about today, how even in the Chukim and the Mishpatim of the Torah, there's so much beauty and there's so many positive lessons that emanate from all of these laws that are very negeya to us on a daily basis, besides for the actual halacha, besides for the Cheshem Mishpat, but there's also going to be a lot of takeaway ben adam lachaveira, ben adam la'atzmo. Rabbi Elia Lapian brings in his sefer that there's Rabbeinu Yonah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that we're all familiar says that im ein derech eretz, ein taira. The main Torah ain't derech eretz. What does that mean? If there's no derech eretz, if there's no midos, if a person is not a mensch, so then there's no Torah. I think we've all been scolded by our principals, by our rabbeim, by our parents maybe throughout the years with this Maimer Chazal that you need midos first. It's very nice to learn. It's very nice to be a ben Torah. It's very nice to be able to be in yeshiva, but it all starts, the foundation must be built on menschlichkeit, on midas taivis, on good manners. You have to be a normal, good, fine, well-adjusted human being, and then you could start learning Torah. Im ein derech eretz, ein Torah. If you don't have common manners and midas and understand how to conduct your affairs in a normal, civilized manner, so then the Torah is really not your biggest problem. You don't have to worry so much about Torah. First, work on your midas. That's the understanding. What is the next step of the Mishnah? The main Torah ain't derech eretz. And if there's no Torah, then there's no derech eretz. How do you understand that? So Rabbeinu Yonah says a beautiful pshat. Rabbeinu Yonah says that there's the common definition of derech eretz, like I just described it, regular normative midas that I guess the whole world knows about. And we've discussed it here many, many times. Basic good midas that a person has to try to have in order not to be a gadol hadar, but just to be a regular good mensch. You have to be able to be nice to people, and you have to say good morning to people, and you have to hold the door open for people, and you have to be able to just do things that are menschlich, that are nice, that are kind, be Isaac and Chesed a little bit. That's normal. Now there's another level. Now that we've been mekabel the Torah on Har Sinai, it's not the same derech eretz anymore that we have to have before the Torah. Before the Torah, we have to have derech eretz like any other person that's walking the face of earth. If they have to be nice people, they have to be kind people, they have to be civilized to their friends, to their relatives, to strangers. That's derech eretz that's true for the entire world. Every person, whether you live on any continent of the planet, you have to do that, whether you're Jewish or whether you're Italian or whether you're anything else, you have to be able to be a mensch, period. That's derech eretz. If you don't have those basic midas taivis, then forget about learning Torah. Torah, you know, it's not really what you need right now. First, you have to fix your midas taivis, and then you could start learning. But the next step is that once we're mekabel on ourselves Torah, Now we have Torah. Now we got Torah from our Sinai. Now we have, we've been in yeshiva, we're learning Torah. Now, ein derech, im ein Torah, ein derech eretz. There's another type of derech eretz that emanates from the Torah that no human being on the planet would even venture to begin to believe that such a level, such a threshold of manners and of mannerisms and of midas taivis and menschlichkeit is even humanly possible. And it only comes into existence because of the Torah. So, Imein Derech Eretz, Ein Torah Rabbeinu Yehuda, he says, that's the regular Derech Eretz. That's the Derech Eretz that you just have to be alive, have a pulse to be able to understand that this is something that I have to do. I have to be nice to people. But then there's another thing. After we receive the Torah, now the Torah heightens a Yid's level of menschlichkeit and what we're expected to do and what's expected of us. And that catapults us to a new level of Derech Eretz that was not really on the horizon before the Torah was given, before we had our own personal Kabbalah Satira. And Rabbi Lapian brings a raya, or an example, of this Rabbeinu Yaina from our parsha. What this means exactly, that now that the Torah is given, we're expected to have an unprecedented, an unparalleled form of Midas Tavis of Derech Eretz. And he says like this, what's the first parsha in the Torah, in this week's parsha, what's the first sugya that the parsha deals with? Ki sikne evet ivri, that you're buying an evet ivri. And he has to work for you for 6 years, and on the seventh year he goes free, and we speak about an Eved that's Nirtza, etc. But that's the first parsha of the Torah is dealing with an Eved Ivri. Now, there's a very, very fascinating element to the laws of an Adin, a Jewish master that owns this Jewish slave. And what the level that he has to treat this slave with. Now, this slave was either, he either sold himself because he had no money, or he was sold, he ganived something and Bestin sold him. But whatever it is, this Eved was sold to a master. And this master now has obligations towards this Eved. You can't treat an Eved terribly, an Eved Ivri. You can't say, you're going to sleep in the dungeon. I'm not going to feed you. You're going to work terrible long hours, and your life is going to be Ganim. That's not the way an Eved Ivri works. In fact, Chazal tell us, Kalakaina Eved Ivri, Kikaina Adin La'atzmai. You think you're buying yourself a nice Eved Ivri, like a person that could work for you, that's going to be beholden to you, and that's going to do your chores for you. But the emes is, if you would do a little bit more research before you buy an Eved Ivri, you would realize that you're not really buying an Eved Ivri. You're really buying yourself an Adin. You're buying yourself a master. Why are you buying yourself a master? Because there's a din as follows. The Pasuk says that the Eved has the option, after his years of servitude are up, he could say, Ahavti es Adini, as Ishti, as Bana, I like it here. It's nice here. Ki Tayv Lo Imach, it's good for you. It's good. It's good. You're living together with your boss, and you're having a nice time, and it's a good experience that you've had. And you want to stay longer. The Torah doesn't like that. The Torah wants you to go out. But there's a parsha of Nirtza, how you could stay if you would want. But the pasuk says Ki Tayv Lo Imach, because it's good for you. Imach with him. With the owner. You had a good time. You had a good experience together. Says Chazal, what does that mean, ki tov lo imach? Imach b'maychol, imach b'mishta, that whatever your boss is eating, if your boss is having a steak for dinner, he has to give you a steak. If he's having aged red wine, he has to give you red wine. If he's having pizza, he has to give you pizza. Whatever he's having, he can't just give you matzahs. He can't just give you, you know, stale bread. He's got to give you imach. You have to live side by side with him. Whatever he's having, you get. Now, let's say there's only one steak in the fridge. It's only one steak, and you're throwing the master's about to throw it on the grill. He's hungry. He wants to have it. All of a sudden, he remembers that he's not allowed to have it. Because if he has it, if he eats the steak by himself, he's going to be in violation of Ki Tavo Imach, Imach B'Maich, Imach B'Mishle. He has to give whatever he's eating himself, the same exact food, to the slave. So what happens? It's on the grill, the steak. He's got to take the steak off the grill when it's ready, and he's going to serve it to his Eved. Because that way, you're covering all your bases. That way, it's imach. You're not mamash eating it together, but at least I'm not violating kitayv la'imach. If let's say, another example, let's say there's only, if you have a bed, and it's a very comfortable bed, you have to give the same exact type of bed to your servant. Let's say there's only one bed. Let's say you went on a trip together and you're staying in a hotel and there's just one single bed in the room and there's no other bed. Guess who gets to sleep on the bed? The slave gets to sleep on the bed. The Eved Ivri gets, and you have to sleep on the floor. Because it's not, otherwise you're in violation of Kitay Limach. In other words, the Torah is expecting the impossible. Who in the world would ever do this? I dare you to find a Gayesha master throughout the entire civilized or uncivilized world that would do this. That without the Torah, there would be such a concept of a derech eretz that I have to give as whatever I have to give to the slave. And if there's only one, I have to give him the steak. I have to give him the mattress. That's a level of derech eretz that is unimaginable. And it only was nischadish when the Torah was given. The Torah comes along, gives us this parasha of Eved Ivri, this week's parasha, and we're yawning during the parasha of Eved Ivri. It's like, doesn't speak to me. I don't know what to take from this Eved Ivri. It's so antiquated, these laws. No. It's not antiquated. We're learning that the Torah has such great expectations of a Yid in terms of Midas, in terms of Derech Eretz, in terms of how we're supposed to treat one another, that not only are you supposed to treat your friend a certain way, your chavrusa a certain way, your rabbi a certain way, your parents a certain way, but even your slave, you have to treat as an equal, and even on a higher level than an equal in certain circumstances. This is an Ein Torah, Ein Derech Eretz. This is Rabbi Elie Lapian's example from this week's parasha, how you learn that there is a heightened expectation of a Yid of Derech Eretz that is not the regular Derech Eretz, the Algemeiner Derech Eretz of Ein Derech Eretz Ein Torah. That doesn't apply when it comes to a Yid. That Derech Eretz, of course, you have to keep that regular Derech Eretz as the rest of the world has to keep it. But now that we're Yidden, now that we got the Torah, now it's a whole new level of Derech Eretz. It's a Torah Dika Derech Eretz, a Derech Eretz that the Torah expects from Klal Yisrael. I saw an amazing story that I think really ties in very well to this Yisayid. The Panovich Rav, Rav Kahneman, Zechit Tzadik Levracha, he, of course, started the famous Yeshiva Panovich in Bnei Brak. His whole community, he was a Rav before the war in a city called Panovich, and his yeshiva was liquidated by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, and his community, and his Beis Yaakovs, and everything. And he was somehow able to escape with his son to Eretz Yisrael, and he rebuilt, he replanted Torah in Eretz Yisrael, and because of him, the Torah world is very, very different. There's a Torah world in Eretz Yisrael and beyond, because many of the great Rosh Yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael learned in Panovich, which was his yeshiva, and he hired the greatest Rosh Yeshivas, Rav Shmuel Rozovsky and Rav Shach and Rav David Pervarsky, and he had the greatest Mashkichim, Rav Chatzko Levenstein, Rav Dessler. He spared no expense in creating the premier Makom Torah in Eretz Yisrael and arguably in the world, B'Shaita. Now, after the war was over, there were a lot of refugee children that came from the Holocaust, also the Alde Tehran, the children that were in Iran that came to Teretz Yisrael, and he was trying to basically place them in his yeshiva. The problem was that he had no beds, he had no room, he had no mattresses, so he rented some other quarters to house these refugees. But again, he had no money. Money was extremely tight. And he had to find mattresses that they could sleep on. He had to find pillows and blankets. And he didn't know what to do. So what he did was he went into a local Beis Medrash in Bnei Brak, a large Beis Medrash, a large shul. And he gave the following drasha. Listen to what he said. He says, Rabbi Isai, I have a stira. I have a stira between two psukim. The pasuk in this week's parasha in Mishpatim says, "Ki tayvlay imach." We just darshan before, "Imach b'maychal, imach b'mishta." Imach means you have to be selfless. You have to give up of your own bed, your own stake. You have to give the eved on the same level, if not on a higher level, than you have yourself. So imach is a word that seems to be saying that you have to be selfless. There's another word, imach, in the Torah that seems to have the opposite connotation, and that is, there's a pasuk that says, v'che achicha imach, your brother has to live imach with you. The Gemara on that word darshins that if, let's say, you and somebody else are walking in a desert, and you have a canteen with water in it, but it's not enough water to keep both of you alive, and there's no access to any civilization, one of you has to drink the water to survive. Now, what do you do with it? Do you drink it yourself, or do you give it over to your friend to drink? V'chei achicha imach means that chayecha kaidman, we darshan. It's your life. You drink the canteen water yourself, and your friend Nebuch has to die, but you have first dibs on that water. It's your water. So, frekt upon a mitzurav, I don't understand. Is imach a selfless word or is it a selfish word? Is imach connoting that it's that you have to take for yourself, that you're first? Or is it that you have to give him first? Which way are we going here? So listen to the way the Pana mitzurav explains. It says, who's this ganef that was sold as an Eved Ivri? He's a person, he's not a Boy Scout, right? This is a person that committed a crime. He stole something, and because of that, he was sold as an Eved Ivri. That's one case of Eved Ivri. Let me ask you a question. If, let's say, you're looking for a cleaning lady in your house, and you ask for references, and she gives you a reference, and you call up the number, it was her old boss, her old balabuster, and she said, what can you tell me about this lady? She says, let me tell you something. I have no jewelry left. She cleaned me out. She kept on every time she came. I would find something else missing by the time she left. Sometimes it was a snood, and sometimes it was a bracelet, and sometimes it was cash. Every time, she's a ganef. Would anyone in their right mind take such a person into, okay, fine, you're hired, perfect. Who would take such a person into their house as a cleaning lady? You have to be insane. Isn't that really what you're doing by taking an Eved Ivri who was sold b'gnei vasai into your house? I mean, who are we talking about over here? It's a guy you stole, and he's the one that you bring in. You really want a ganav? It's bad enough you're worried about ganavim breaking into your house, but do you want a ganav invited into your house, give him the key to your house, and be able to just roam freely throughout the rooms of your abode? It doesn't make any sense. Says the Pana Mitzurav, this is not stam a crazy ganav. It's not a crazy ganav. Nobody would hire a real ganav, a real bandit, to bring him into your house. That's not normal. What type of ganav is it? It's a ganav that he's a good guy. He's an ish yasher. He's fine. He has a family. He has a wife. He has children. He has parents. And he's just down on his luck. He has no, you know, in America, we're very used to having like a safety net. Like if you don't work, you get unemployment, you get welfare, you get Social Security. There's a lot of different layers of to catch a person that, Rachmana Litzlan, is not able to pay his bills. But In the olden days, they didn't have that. You either were able to work and make money. If you didn't have a job, you had no money. You had no food. There was no Section 8. There was no WIC. There was no benefits. There was no food stamps. You didn't have that. So imagine the scene that there was a person, a Yid, and he's sitting at the dining room table waiting for supper. His wife says, "Sweetheart, we have no, you're unemployed. We have no food. We have nothing to eat. The kids are hungry. Every single night we're going to bed without food. The cupboards are bare. Can you do something?" But the less brera, this guy has no choice. And so he has to feed his family. And so he justifies, and we should never be put into such an isayin, but he justifies going into somebody else's house and taking some food, going into a store and shoplifting. Again, is it justified? Absolutely not. But he justifies it. So such a person, it's not a terrible criminal. It's just he had to do it. It was a stopgap measure that he had to take some. But he was busted. And now he needs to be able to still support his family. He has no money to pay back for the geneva that he stole. And basically, Bestin arranges with a fine, upstanding balabayas that they were able to find, that give him a job, let him work for you as an Eved Ivri. He'll keep some money, he'll send some to his wife and his children. Everybody will be okay then. And so fine. So the Odin is a good-hearted person. He's going to take such a person in because the Eved himself has so many tzaras, and he understands that it's not really him. It was an extenuating circumstance, and he cuts him extra slack. The Adin understands, says the Panovich Rav, that this Eved has so many daigas, he has so many tzaras. He's worried about his family, how he's going to feed them, how they're going to, who's going to do homework with them now that I'm an Eved Ivri, how am I going to, you know, provide for them and pay for their schar limud, and he has so many daigas on his head. The Adin, knowing that the Eved can't sleep, he's a good skite himself, he's a good person, the Adin, he's not going to be able to sleep knowing that the Adin is so upset. The Adin is not able to sleep because besides for all of his daigas, he has no mattress to sleep, and he's sleeping on the floor, which doesn't make matters. So in order to create an environment that both of them are somewhat able to sleep, the Adin says, "You know what, you sleep on my mattress. You eat the steak, because I could live with myself if you're able to sleep, but I can't sleep if you're not sleeping. So neither of us are going to sleep." So the Adin gives him the mattress. The Adin gives him the good food, because that way the Balabais is going to be able to sleep as well as hopefully the Eved. Says the Panovich Rav, "I have this problem on my hand in Panovich. I have dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of refugee children that are Yisaimim, and they need a place to sleep. And now I'm telling you about it. You're not going to be able to sleep tonight because you know about it. And they're not going to be able to sleep tonight because they have no place to sleep. They have nothing to sleep on." So he says, "Let me give you an eitzah, guys. You give up your mattresses and your blankets in the meantime so that they could sleep, and that way you'll be able to sleep also. So all the bases will be covered." And sure enough, by the end of the day, all the balabatim in the shul brought their mattresses and their pillowcases and their sheets to the dorms in Panovich, and the children then, the boys, were able to sleep. But this is the level of expectation of Derech Eretz that the Torah is imposing upon a Yid, that we have to be able to up our game of Derech Eretz. It's not enough just to say, "Well, I'm well-mannered like a guy is well-mannered." You have to be beyond that. That's not acceptable. Rav Schwab has a great vart. He says, the pasuk says, "V'ata abamisemai sidreich," and you, Klal Yisrael, will tread upon their bumis, upon their highest places. Meaning, you're going to trounce the gayim when there's mochamis, etc. Says Rav Schwab, I'll tell you what the pshat, another pshat in the pasuk. "V'ata abamisemai sidreich." A yid's journey doesn't end where a guy's journey ends in terms of midas, in terms of manners. It only starts there. Meaning, you give me the best-mannered guy, I'm not going to compare myself Shabbat b'Shabbat and say, "Okay, fine, if it was good enough for this person who is such a wonderful, kind-hearted person, that's good enough for me also." No, that's where your journey begins. You find the highest mountain of a guy. You find the guy that's the most well-mannered, and there are many guys that are wonderful people. You see in yeshiva, many of the custodians in the yeshiva can't find nicer people. Always fine, always saying good morning nicely. They're very nice people. Okay, so I should just... No, that's where it starts. That's where the bar begins for you. Your journey begins now from the highest, the best guy that you could find. That's where your journey begins. Tell you a story. Reb Tzvi Hirsch Breido was the Rebbe of Dessler from Kelem, and he had his wife hired a cleaning lady, and he found that this cleaning lady, who was an orphan, she was stealing stuff from the house, and basically his Rebbetzin was like scolding her and making her feel horrible. So the Reb Tzvi Hirsch Breide, this great tzaddik, says to his wife, "You're not allowed to cause her harm. You can't do this to her. She's a yesaima, a Jewish orphan girl, and you have to be very nice to her. Call Yasim v'amana leisanin. You're not allowed to oppress the widow and the orphan." This week's parsha. So she said, "But she stole. Yeah, I said, but she's an orphan. You have to be nice to her. If you have a tain on her, if you feel like you could prove that she stole and make your case, you're entitled to go to a din Torah with her. But to just, treat her like horribly and make her and keep turning the screws on her and make her feel like, like subhuman, that's not acceptable." So she says, "Okay, I'll take her to a din Torah." So they arrange that the next day the two of them are going to duke it out in a din Torah. And along as they're walking to the Bestin, Reb Tzvi Hirsch Breide is also coming to the Bestin. So his wife says, "Why are you taking off from yeshiva? You're not a mechutin here. Like, it's just between me and her. We're going to go to the local rav. We're going to deal with it. Why do you have to come?" So he says, "I'm coming because she's the yesaima, and she has no one in this world to defend her. You have everybody knows you're my wife, so everyone's machshav of you. She's a poor orphan girl. No one's going to be able to defend. I'm coming to Bestin to be her tayin. I'm going to be tining her case against you. I wouldn't try this at home when the day comes," but Tzvi Hirsch Breide apparently, had the guts and the tenacity to do this. And I'm sure that the story ended, I don't know how, but I'm sure the entire story just, the whole case just fell apart right then and there, and they just aborted that mission, and I assume they lived happily ever after. But we see from here the uber sensitivity that a yid has to have. It's not a normal derech eretz. It's not a normal, this whole parsha of Eved Ivri and Avdos and people working for you and people that are that you pay and you feel like you have certain ownership rights and you have certain ability to abuse and to, she's working under you so you can push and insist and be in a position of applying pressure on her. That's not the Torah's definition of menschlichkeit, of derech eretz. A main Torah ain't derech eretz. Once we got a Torah, there's a whole new world of midas that a yid has to abide by and has to think about before they do anything. Just want to end with a beautiful vart that I saw from the Argadal Yahu B'Shem Reb David of Kotsk, one of the Kotsker dynasty, that David HaMelech writes in Tehillim, we say it every day in Pesukei Dezimra, it says, Magid Devar of Yaakov, Chukov Mishpatim L'Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told over Parshas Mishpatim, this week's Parsha, he told over the Chukim and Mishpatim to Klal Yisrael, what he expects. Le'asa Chayin L'chol Gai. He didn't do this to any other nation. U'mishpatim Bal Yedom. And our Mishpatim, they have no idea about our Mishpatim, they have no Shaychus to our Mishpatim. They might have some, jurisprudence that maybe comes from halacha in certain states, but it basically is very diluted. It's not the same. Our laws and their laws are nothing to do with each other. The guy has no idea about our mishpatim. Le'asa chen l'chol gai. Umishpatim Bal Yadam, they don't know about our Mishpatim. Halleluka, we end with Halleluka. That's how the kapitel ends, as do many of the kapitloch at the end of Tehillim that we say every morning, Reb Sigurd Zimmer. Says Reb David Mikotsk that the difference between our Mishpatim and a guy's Mishpatim is that our Mishpatim, it's possible to have Hallel emanate from our Mishpatim. We just sang Hallel today. We had it's Rish Chaydesh, Adar Aleph, we had Hallel. A guy's Mishpatim, do you think anyone ever sings Hallel from a guy's Mishpatim? Has there ever been a guy that went to law school and learns about tort law and family law and malpractice law and whatever all types of laws that you can do as a lawyer? Anyone happy about it? Everyone's going through it. They have to. They want to become lawyers. They have to pass the bar. They have to take their tests, v'chule. No one's like rejoicing over the laws. Like there's nothing to rejoice. They're just stale. You have to memorize it. You have to understand it. You have to be have the logic. Whatever you need to do in order to get through the LSATs and law school. And no one's singing like praises about the law that I know of. When it comes to Klal Yisrael, Magid Devar Al Yaakov, Chukum Mishpat Yisrael, Halleluka. There is a Hallel. There is a beautiful praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that if you listen carefully in Parashas Mishpatim, if you're Mavir Sedra and you learn all of that, we just gave one example of Eved Ivri. That's where it starts. But if you go through all of the Parashas of Torah, whether it's why you pay Dalet Vehei, Shar and San, one, because the Torah is more chas on a person that had to go through embarrassment. So the Torah had mercy on the person that had to schlep the Seh. So he only pays Dalet and the Shar pays, hey, it's more balabatish to schlep a Shar than a Seh. All of these dakastik dinim that you see the Torah cares about a ganav, cares about an Eved Ivri, cares about a person that you don't even think about that they deserve as much respect as a regular yid. It's not true. The Torah is telling you they deserve equal, if not more, respect. You have to understand what they're going through. You have to commiserate with their plight, understand, stay up at night worrying about your Eved Ivri. What's he going through? What's his family going through? And this is true for all. Kol Yosem Alman Leisanon, caring about the widow, caring about the orphan. Dibra HaKasla Bahayva, Rashi says. It really applies to everybody. You can't torment anybody. There are so many halachas. These are all halaldik halachas. These are halachas that we should be able to sing and dance that we have such mishpatim. It shows how beautiful the Torah is, how caring a yid is supposed to be. The ataba may say my sidrach that we're supposed to look at a guy, respect guyim, but understand that the greatest guyim, that's where my journey begins. Like sometimes I think, you know, some people, they you know, can my child watch this movie or not? Is a certain movie mutter for my child? Oh, you look what it's rated. If it's rated G, if it's rated PG, PG-13, this and that, who's passing these shailas? Who says that it's, is this Torah min haShamayim? Is this halacha mish miSinai, that this is PG, this is PG-13, this is... Who's passing? Some prosta guy that, you know, or committee of Gayim that have no shaykhas to any morality, so they think this is fine. Oh, so they think it's fine, so therefore that's where I have to shtaltzu to them, and they're my paisag achrin. You have to say, okay, it's very nice that they think that this is PG-13. That's where my journey begins. If they think this is kosher, then that's where I'll maybe begin my hashgacha in my house. If they think it's okay, that's not okay for my child. I'm going to like go on a much higher level. It's fine to have, we can respect Gayim, but Gayim are not, it's not Gayim. They don't have a Torah. They don't have this moral conscience, this moral compass that a Yid is supposed to have. We're Klal Yisrael, the Mishpatim of Klal Yisrael is supposed to be Halleluka. It's supposed to give Hallel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you understand. Ashreinu Matayv Chalkeinu, we're fortunate to have these halachas because they keep us on the straight and narrow path, that we don't become barbarians, that we don't mistreat people and torment people, even people that we think we're entitled to because there are slaves, quote unquote, and they're working for us, and that doesn't entitle a person to treat and mistreat and abuse anybody. person has to look to everybody with respect, even hardened criminals, even people that you feel are not worthy of your respect. That's not what the Torah looks at it like. The Torah sees every human being as being important, precious, relevant, valid. Umishpatim by Yedom, Haluka, the mishpatim that the Goyim have no concept about. They can't fathom these laws. This isn't law school to be able to treat people on the level that Klal Yisrael is expected. It's a new level of derech eretz. It's a new level of law. It's a mishpatim that's a haluka level of mishpat. And we're fortunate to be able to have such laws and to be able to keep us human and menschlich on a level that's unsurpassed on every level. You know, the Goyim, they're pointing fingers at Klal Yisrael today. They're taking us to international courts it's mamash chelm. It's unbelievable. There's no army in the world that's as careful as the Israeli army to protect civilian life and to try to get humanitarian aid in and trying to do everything. It's obviously war. War is not pretty and war has a lot of collateral damage, but there was no choice. And so Goyim love pointing fingers. So Yidden are not so moral. It's a chucha, it's lula, it's just a joke. Klal Yisrael is Yidden are so precious. You see the chayalim, you know, how holy they are. And the ones that were nifter al kiddush Hashem, like every one of them has such a hadras panim. Like you look at them, like unbelievable. These people are tzaddikim. You see the shine on their faces and the light in their eyes and the smile. They're holy. They're holy people. These are not the Goyim love to say, Jews are just like us. They know that we're not. They know that, and it bothers them that we're living on a higher level. They're trying to pull us down. They're trying to make us like equal, if not lower than us, because they don't like the fact there's a kinah that came from Sinai. That Sinai is from Sheyar the Sin of Elam. When we got this Torah, Akdesha, the world realizes that we're the conscience of the world. We are the Arlagayim. But it's important forgetting about what the world thinks. We have to understand that we live on a higher plane, that our Cheshem Mishpat is different, our laws are different, our anhagas have to be different, our midas have to be different. And even if it passes in society to get away with certain things, it's not for a Yid. A Yid always has to try to up the game and to live on a much higher plane. And Mitzvah Hashem, we will. These are the parshas that will teach us this. And the Mitzvah Hashem, we should have a beautiful, beautiful Shabbos.